Hey everyone, we are recapping Chief of War Episode 7, so there may be spoilers ahead. If you'd like to skip the recap, feel free to jump ahead to right around the 1 minute 25 second mark. Thanks for listening and enjoy this episode of Feathers and Fire.
Men like these are beneath the laws of mercy and peace. They are the rot, the filth that infects this land and will destroy us.
You are listening to Feathers and Fire, HPR's Chief of War After Show podcast. Thanks so much for joining us for deeper discussion and additional context to the Apple TV Plus series. I'm Russell Subiono.
Aloha mai, and I'm Mehana Makainai. Today we will be discussing Episode 7, Day of Spilled Brains, an intense episode filled with deceit, clashing of opinions, and a brutal and unsuspecting attack resulting in the loss of countless innocent lives. This gut-wrenching episode inspired us to take a closer look at initial foreign perspectives of Hawaii and her people, and vice versa, as well as reported historic encounters. We'll also talk about the show's apparent developing love story between Kaiana and Ka'ahumanu, and what we think about this from a storyline as well as a historic perspective. But first, it's recap time.
All right. So we open on Hawaii Island, where Kamehameha's village welcomes a newborn baby. We then go to the shoreline, where Captain Metcalf, Marley, and a few crew come ashore to Hawaii Island. You may remember the last episode ended with their arrival into Hawaii waters. They make their way inland, where they find forests of iliahi, sandalwood. We return to Kamehameha's village, where amidst the celebrations, Kaiana and Ka'ahumanu slip away to meet with a spy who shares that Keaua's district is impenetrable and any attempt to assassinate him would fail. We then see Metcalf's crew cutting down sandalwood trees when they're spotted by a young scout. They chase the scout only to run into Kamehameha's army. Kaiana and Ka'ahumanu make their way back to the village, where we see them flirt as their relationship starts to deepen.
Kamehameha then confronts Captain Metcalf, who says he's only interested in fair trade. At a council meeting, Kaiana pleads with Kamehameha to kill the captain, like Kalaniopuu did with Cook, to send a message to the outside world. Kamehameha is open to trade and continues to uphold Kanawai Mamalahoi, the law of the splintered paddle, and he refuses this request. Kaiana then decides to take matters into his own hands along with Nahi and Toni. They board Metcalf's ship in the middle of the night, but before they can execute their plan, Kamehameha and his warriors arrive to stop the killings.
Back on land, we see Kaiana accuse his brother Namake of ratting him out to Kamehameha, but we learn it was actually Kupuohi. We see the rift start to deepen within the family, Kaiana and Nahi on one side, and Namake, Kupuohi, and Heke on the other. Captain Metcalf is then ordered by Kamehameha to leave their islands. They unwillingly agree, but after returning to their ship, instead of departing, we see them sail along the coastline to the village where Vi and her family live. The ship parks as close to shore as possible, and we hear Metcalf order his men to load the cannons with nails. The villagers gather on the shoreline to marvel at the large ship. Vi soon realizes what is about to happen and yells for her people to run, but it's too late. Metcalf yells fire, and men and women and children are mowed down by the cannons. Kaiana arrives to see the village laid to waste and Metcalf's ship sailing away, ending the episode. So heartbreaking.
It is. It's really a heartbreaking episode where I think the buildup, we kind of all know where it's headed, but we don't want it to go there.
Yeah.
You know, this episode, it really brings up, you know, important topics of native and foreign encounters, perspectives, relationships with one another. Captain James Cook of Great Britain is often regarded as the very first non-Pacific Islander to come to the Hawaiian Islands in 1778. He's been briefly mentioned in Chief of War, but by the time of the series, is already dead. Some believe that the first Europeans to Hawaii may have arrived earlier than Cook, but that those crew members never left our islands and were essentially absorbed into the Hawaiian community. We know that Cook is the first explorer to map the location of Hawaii. And this is really important because This information was later spread abroad, which led to the knowledge of our existence and subsequent and consistent travel to Hawaii by other explorers, merchants, missionaries, adventurers, and pretty much everyone else you can think of.
And what I know about Captain Cook prior to doing research for this episode was pretty much kind of limited to what I remember learning in elementary school. Here are some highlights, right? He was the first Westerner to arrive in Hawaii. Hawaiians thought he was a god because he arrived during Makahiki, and the sails on his ships resembled cultural items used during the season of peace. I also know that he kidnapped and ransomed King Kalaniopuu in order to get back some items that were stolen by Hawaiians, and that's the action that led to his death at Kealakekua Bay on Hawaii Island. What I learned recently was that prior to arriving in Hawaii, he had already had experience interacting with Pacific Island cultures by spending time in Aotearoa, New Zealand, and Tahiti, which I believe explains how he was able to communicate with Hawaiians and initially earn the trust of our people. And if you want to learn more about Captain Cook, there was this book published last year by Hampton Sides called The Wide, Wide Sea, that revisits his fateful final voyage.
One that I can recommend and add to the mix is Ancient History of the Hawaiian People by Fornander. And yes, Captain Cook was familiar with some of our cousins, but he really wasn't prepared for what Hawaii had in store for him, and ultimately that being his death, which Chief of War turns our attention to when Kaiana tells Kamehameha to do as your uncle Kalaniopuu did with Cook and kill Metcalf and his crew. This is based on the fact that, as you stated, Captain Cook overstepped his authority in Hawaii and, in trying to kidnap the High Chief Kalaniopuu, was killed by Hawaiian warriors. But let's go back a little before Cook died. Relationships started off very differently. When we look at the journals of the crew members aboard the Resolution and Discovery, the ships that first arrived to Hawaii, we learn that upon encountering Hawaiians for the first time, that the Europeans were incredibly impressed. Wow. Some of their areas of intrigue included mea no'eau, or the fine arts and crafts of the people, such as our featherworks that are so beautifully displayed in Chief of War, the abundance of food showcasing refined agricultural systems, the robust and healthy populations, the physical physique of the Kanaka Maoli, and the cleanliness of our people. I remember reading a journal entry in college where a crew member wrote about Hawaiians bathing 3 times a day. And he was just besides himself. And I found this pretty humorous. But when we really think about it, we're dealing with sailors here, right? Who probably rarely, if ever, saw a bath, and who also come from cold environments where I've been told people don't always or bathe regularly.
Yeah, it's true.
It's, oh my goodness. Good thing I'm not in those cold environments. Okay. And now these sailors are in Hawaii, where being in the water is a constant part of daily life. You know, you work in the lo'i, and when you're pau, you jump in the kahawai, the stream, to clean off. You're down at the beach doing various activities. So naturally, you go for a swim in the ocean to refresh yourself. But this is just so different from anything the Europeans have experienced before. What I truly recognize in these writings is the utter astonishment for the sophistication and beauty of the culture that they have just stumbled upon.
And I think Pa does a great job with illustrating our people's sophistication and beauty throughout the series. Mm-hmm. And it really comes into play in this episode because Pa kind of flips the script on the way Hollywood has historically portrayed who the peaceful people are and who the savages are. And in the beginning of the episode, we see how our whole community celebrates the birth of a child and how each person kind of is expected to contribute to the child's parenting. And then we see Metcalf and crew sneak onto the island and start chopping down trees. We see how Kamehameha continually stands firm for peace and peaceful relations, while Metcalf lies about his intentions to plunder and pillage. I remember watching this and thinking about how indigenous people have been portrayed in films in the early days of Hollywood as savages and ignorant brutes, and kind of how refreshing it was to see how it's reversed in this series.
Yes, and so much more accurate, we would argue, too.
One quick side note about Captain Cook. There's a monument in Kealakekua Bay to mark where he was killed, which is in stark contrast to the statue of him that I came across in Anchorage, Alaska a few years ago. My wife and I were there during the winter, waiting to get a table at a cafe at 9 a.m., but you wouldn't know it because it was still completely dark, right? So we walk across the street to check out this viewing area where you can see the ocean, and there's this bronze statue of Cook, commemorating his efforts to find a Northwest Passage. In fact, the water we were looking at is part of what is called Cook Inlet. And it's just so interesting to me to think about how he's so reviled in one place, in one area of the world, but elevated in a completely, you know, other place in the world.
Now, speaking of perspectives, let's get back to our first contact story and talk about the Kanaka Maoli perspective. The Hawaiians were also intrigued by the newcomers, and they treated them initially with great hospitality and respect. And Chief of War does an excellent job of showcasing, as you mentioned, some of the relationships and areas of interest, in particular with the idea of the usefulness of foreign guns and weapons, which we've touched on before. Now, there are two main theories as to who Hawaiians thought Europeans were. The first is the one you already mentioned, that Kanaka thought Cook and his men were gods, that Cook was the god Lono of peace and agriculture, arriving in fulfillment of a prophecy. There's that word prophecy a lot. Yeah, we've kind of seen it quite a bit. But others believe that the people knew Cook and his men were just that, men, but from a different homeland. I kind of think there were probably some debates and there was truth to both of these stories. Like maybe one brother may have said to another, "Eh, those are gods. That's Lono, right?" And the other brother responded, "No, those ain't gods. They're just haole. They're just foreigners from another land." So I think there's probably a little bit of truth to both. And there wasn't this full consensus in the beginning. I also think the reason the God theory got so much traction, whether it was the dominant idea amongst Hawaiians or not, is because Cook himself said, "These people think I am their God." So it was self-proclaimed. Like he couldn't understand why else he would be treated so well by people. But that was our culture.
I did this interview with UH Law and Hawaiian Studies professor Malia Akutagawa a couple of years ago. And what I remember most is her description of what her grandmother told her about life in Hawaii in ancient days, that resources were so abundant that you couldn't help but be generous.
Mary Kovelapukui asked my great-grandmother how much fish was in the fish pond. This is at Ualapu'i on the east side. And my great-grandmother's answer was, "Oh, there's so much fish. When you walk in the water, you got to kick them with your feet and grab with your hand, whatever you want to eat." And I thought, is this what my great-grandmother saw every day of her life? Of course, the kupuna would say, "Oh, my, e'ai, like, come, eat, you know, get plenty." And that's what I realized was the nature of the generosity of our people. Because if every day of your life you saw abundance, you'd never hoard, you'd never have this sort of Hobbesian universe of life is nasty, brutish, and short. You would share everything.
So that's what I think about when I see the contrast between the Hawaiians and the Ilikea in this series. And that's what I think about when you talk about how hospitable our people were when Cook first arrived.
But it really shows that our cultural perspective was about pono, being balanced. And if they've done nothing to offend us yet, we're not going to go and assume that something bad is going to happen. We're going to try and treat this relationship with, again, respect. Yeah. Even if it might be to our downfall. Now, this initial relationship of curiosity and amusement that we've been talking about on both sides, right? Absolutely sours.
Yeah.
Cook and his men have a reputation, not just in Hawaii, but throughout Oceania, places like Australia, places like Tahiti, places like Aotearoa that you mentioned, of being exceedingly greedy, self-serving, and basically brutal to the natives they encountered who got in their way. Were unprovoked battles and murders something that happened? Yes. So in Chief of War, the attitude that Keomoku has towards the Ilikea every time he meets a new crew is really my favorite. Because he is very skeptical of their intentions and always tells them the same thing, which is, get back on your boat. You know, he's like, get back on your boat. We'll make decisions about you later. Kaiana, with his distrust, is also based on his personal travels and knowledge of what these foreigners are capable of. While these scenes in Chief of War may be made up, the ideas behind them, the questioning, the worry, the wanting to be the ones to make the first move versus reacting, can all be rooted in historical encounters and hardships that have happened. The massacre of the Day of the Spilled Brains in Chief of War shows an attitude that some of the early explorers and travelers to Hawaii had of our people. Despite being astonished by our culture and lifestyle, despite recognizing its sophistication and beauty, many foreigners still saw themselves as superior and ultimately the Kanaka as disposable.
It has been so interesting to watch Kaiana's frustration with Kamehameha's naivete about the outside world. Kaiana was, you know, kind of cursed with this knowledge of the hearts of man and future possibilities, and it's changed him. Think about how far he's come from the peaceful warrior who sought refuge on Kauai at the start of the series, but now he's kind of like this John Wick character in that he was dragged back into his old life, unable to find peace until he kills everyone trying to kill him.
This truly is a huge topic that still has so much more we could talk about. But how about we move into something a little bit lighter right now? And I'm talking about the possible developing love story.
Oh, no.
So, Russell, what do you think about Kaiana and Ka'ahumanu?
Oh, man. Kaiana, what are you doing? I know I gave Kupuohi lots of grief in the past.
Oh, that's an understatement.
For not waiting for Kaiana. But what he's doing now is worse. And I think I saw this flirting with Ka'ahumanu coming. It crossed my mind when they first met in the cave. I caught glimpses of it when she summoned him after he first returned in episode 5. Kupuohi has always stood by his side, except for that one stretch of time when he was gone. So this is strange maneuvering by Kaiana for me.
So your attitude has changed a little bit now, huh? Not so mad at Kupuohi anymore, considering what's going on with Kaiana and Ka'ahumanu, bowing and curtsing at one another, giggling in the field. Thank you, Russell, for admitting that this is way worse than what Kupuohi did. And Russell and I are totally getting into this storyline because, again, we've talked about how marriage wasn't really that big a deal, yeah. But we're invested in these characters and who they're with and what they're portraying, and we want to keep that together, right? Now, as if this story isn't complicated enough, let's throw in another love predicament, right? One that stands to create colossal issues, you know, between Kamehameha and Kupuohi and alliances. Just when we think about what this could do, it's great drama. And people have this love-hate relationship with these type of scenarios. Now, I'm guessing that many viewers are wondering if this romance is historically legit. Are you wondering, Russell?
Yeah, because I'm watching it and it feels natural. But what I'm seeing of Ka'ahumanu on the screen is kind of different than how the church taught it. And so I'm not quite sure.
Okay, well, and I'm so sorry, but I also don't know. What I can tell you is that Ka'ahumanu had a number of relationships with a number of men. Remember our conversation on how marriage was a loose concept in Hawaii?
Yes.
Yes. Well, before Ka'ahumanu became a Christian, so maybe, yeah, this was left out of some of the church's teachings, she had multiple husbands and lovers, even when she wasn't supposed to. So based on this, I'm going to say that a romance with Kaiana was not impossible by any means. Let's just look at two examples of Ka'ahumanu's known lovers. While her body was placed under kapu by her kane Kamehameha, meaning at the time no one was supposed to be sleeping with her but him, she was said to be participating in some extracurricular activities with Kanihonui, who was Kamehameha's nephew. When word got out of the affair, he was strangled to death for breaking the kapu. Remember, guys, don't mess with the kapu system. One example. Later in life, another example, After the death of Kamehameha, Kaahumanu married the chief Kaumualii of Kauai in a very diplomatically savvy move because Kauai represented an island that her late husband Kamehameha could never truly conquer. Some report that she basically forced Kaumualii into this marriage, like kind of kidnapped him. By this point in life, she was very good at acting on her power and getting her way. So yes, she was a woman who enjoyed the company of many men over the course of her lifetime, even sometimes to their own detriment. And in Chief of War, it looks like Kaiana may become one of those potential lovers.
As you're talking about the drama that is taking place in Chief of War, and the fact that a lot of it is in Olelo Hawaii, you know, a language that is foreign to probably many of the listeners, I was starting to think, oh, this might be like the first example of an H drama, right? think of how popular K dramas have been in the last few years. And so like, this is a H drama.
Okay.
All right. We'll be right back after a short break.
Let's face it. Life gets busy, but you don't want to miss out. HPR makes it easy to stay connected. Introducing the Akamai Recap. It's a quick roundup of local news stories sent to your inbox every weekday afternoon. It's free, and it takes just 10 seconds to sign up. Visit hawaiipublicradio.org/akamai.
All right, let's get into the categories, and we're in episode 7. There's only 2 episodes left, and so I thought it'd be a good time to kind of roll out a couple new categories for our list. And so we'll introduce those today. First category, most impactful or chicken skin moment. And for me, it was hard to pick because I think there are 2 really impactful moments in this episode. I'll briefly mention my second choice, which is the scene with Kaiana and his family where he accuses Namake of telling Kamehameha about his plans. I love that he calls his brother by his whole name, right? Namakeeha.
Oh my gosh, brings back memories, right?
Yeah.
I always knew when my mom was mad at me because the whole name came out. Like, I'm going to get lickings now.
That's right. Only to find out that it was Kubuohi, right? And so family is everything to me and our people, and it's heartbreaking to see them in conflict. But my first choice for most impactful moment, without question, is the scene where Metcalf fires his cannons on the village. We've been saying frequently in this podcast that Chief of War is a fictional depiction, but I can't help but feel every nail. I didn't see it coming, and it was the most impactful scene I've seen in a film or series probably since Once Were Warriors.
And you know what's interesting is this battle scene makes me think of the stories that we have after the death of Cook. Mm-hmm. So after Captain Cook dies, there's a couple of variations of the story, but in one variation, the Europeans are kind of fleeing for their life because even though they have weapons, the Kanaka Maoli have numbers and they are finely trained warriors, right? And so the remainder of Cook's men basically flee aboard their ships and take off and just barely escape. That's one version. In another version, I've been told after Cook was killed, the Hawaiians kind of started to retreat from the battle because as far as they were concerned, we had a problem with you, you're dead, we're po. The battle's po, let's move on, which also makes sense when you think about our culture and our connection to pono and balance, right? Either way, after the battle concluded and the Europeans got back on their ships and they departed, it said that a few days later, they returned to Kealakekua and they unleashed their fire on unsuspecting Hawaiians that were on the shore and hanging out and doing certain activities as kind of like their last like revenge against what just happened. And they took out all of these people and then they set sail. So massacres like this did happen in our history, which makes it even harder to watch, realizing that this is based on events that occurred and terrible ways in which our people were treated, especially after knowing how kind and generous they initially were with the Europeans and the foreigners who arrived to our shore and really trying to give them the benefit of the doubt. My moment would be connected to this moment of the massacre, but going back and forth where you have Kaiana is finally made aware that Metcalf and his men have returned to a nearby Wei, and he immediately knows that they are about to execute, you know, hundreds of unsuspecting Kanaka. And the scene jumps back and forth between the boat and the community members gathering, and then Kaiana frantically running through the forest. And it's so intense. It's completely heartbreaking, as if you absolutely know what's about to occur, but you can't help hoping that something's going to change. You know, maybe the crew members will have a change of heart, and those that were like, you had some on board that were like, I don't know if we should do this, you know, like maybe they'll stop and say this is wrong, or maybe Kaiana will get there in time, or maybe Vi will warn the villagers and they'll get out of there in time. And you're hoping for all of these things to occur, but you really know deep down that it's not, you know, that this massacre is going to unfold.
All right, next category, character that brought the most heat or the performance that we really liked. It's really easy to shine the light on the lead actor in any series or any film. I mean, he's the lead for a reason. But in this episode, man, Jason Momoa really just brought the heat. He's juggling all these situations, you know, Keoua's imminent attack, Kahikili's imminent attack, the forthcoming influence of the outside world. And he's also running into all of these distractions too, right? Like what Kupuohi may or may not have done, Kamehameha kind of being peaceful almost to a fault, and Kaahumanu kind of growing on him. And I'm just really intrigued as how his character is really navigating it all. We get a wide range of emotions from Jason in this episode, and I just really enjoyed his work.
The whole spectrum, right? Yeah. And not easy to do, not easy to pull off, yeah. And really kind of exciting to see it all portrayed in just one episode.
Yeah.
So my choice, her time on screen in this episode was really small, but her presence was definitely overpowering. Her performance heightened the climax, which was the beach massacre. And I'm talking about Maori actress Roimata Fox, who plays Tauda. So much raw emotion, so important to this scene. I only wish she could have seen this sooner and warned everyone. But then again, Kaiana warned the chiefs and nobody listened to him. So, away.
All right, next category, most questionable moment or moment that raised questions or the moment that needs more explanation. I don't think there was a lot of large cultural questions for me in this episode. So the biggest questions for me are relational. Does Kamehameha pick up on Kaahumanu and Kaiana's just a little too friendly vibe? My other question is, why hasn't Namake and Kupuohi's relationship been addressed yet within their family? There's still a lot of people making insinuations, but nobody actually talking about what happened. Kaiana, I'm sure he must suspect something.
Always got to go back to Kupuohi, yeah? Yeah, Russell. Well, I think that they just feel like he's got a lot on his plate right now, and maybe right now is not the appropriate time to talk about it. Plus, too, as far as they're concerned, they've kind of squashed it. You know?
Yeah, it seems that way.
My questionable moment is Kupuohi going behind Kaiana's back and sharing his plans to murder Metcalf and Marley. It just seems out of character for her to do something like that. Like the character they've built her up to be, I would expect Kupuohi to deal with this with Kaiana herself and not get other people involved. But I guess it was necessary to set the stage for the foreigners to show their true colors and to create this really, you know, dramatic and terrible ending. You needed to have a way to allow the foreigners to live, right? Yeah. And so, as always, Kupuohi is like our scapegoat for who we're going to be irritated with. Girl, so not fair.
All right. This is one of our new categories. I'm naming it the Kainamakua Memorial Best Line from the Episode category.
Say that five times fast.
And the reason is because in our last episode, we shared an interview with Kainamakua. And Cassie, our arts and cultural reporter, asked him what his favorite line is. And he shared that it was K.L. Moku's line, "Go away, John Young." So the new category just honors an interesting or memorable line from the episode. And for me, this is my best line. Why would a queen make her warriors do that? And I just thought it was so hilarious. That's what Kaiana asks Kaahumanu when she shows him what looks like a curtsy to me, right? And explains that it's the European custom for greeting a queen. And it's all part of that playful interaction between Kaiana and Kaahumanu. And it was some very welcome humor in a very dramatic series. And also a little chuckle at the expense of European traditions.
There's a custom when they meet the queen to show respect.
Why would the queen make her wares do that?
Oh, that is for women.
It's so funny how you think this is such a nice little refreshing like humor in a dramatic episode. But what about the comfort in a sad episode from the... No, Russ and I are going to be going at this till the end of time. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, so my lines... Actually, can I give two? My first line comes from a very different scene and mood. It's the council meeting with Kamehameha regarding the arrival of Metcalf and his crew and in regards to how these men should be handled. Kaiana states, use these men and send a message to the world that no one will control these islands. Pretty heavy line, very different from the peace route that Kamehameha favors and Kaiana used to favor. And I think also very kind of foretelling of maybe what types of future situations we could be in if this advice is not taken.
Yeah.
And then another line I want to add quickly is when Kaiana comes back from his little playful escapade with Kaahumanu. And,
little flirty
moment. Yeah. And Kupuohi is sitting there and she says, where have you been, Kaiana?
Where have you been?
The spy returned. Kewa has been silent.
Nothing good comes of the quiet.
It's a great line. Because everybody knows when they're in trouble, like as we said, because you say your name. She never needs to say his name. She could have just said, where have you been? But she's like, where have you been, Kaiana? You know? And I'm like, ooh, brother, better watch out.
This was my wife's reaction to that scene. Mm-hmm.
That's all the women watching that show right there. Like, he ain't fooling nobody.
All right. The Meredith Artley most Momoa moment. I'm going to say that moment with Kaahumanu on the beach towards the end of the episode where they almost kiss before being interrupted by Metcalf's ship appearing offshore. I was just thinking, stereotypical chick wanting the bad boy when she's got a good husband at home who has a good job, makes sacrifices for his family, and is kind to people. And I'm only speaking based on like the comments about Jason I've heard from the women in my life in general, but having a moment with the ultimate bad boy on a beach seems like the ultimate most Momoa fantasy moment.
Okay. I'm not even going to touch that. Okay. So my Meredith Artley most Momoa moment will be the Momoa eyebrow furrow we got going on in this episode. Most notably, when he's speaking with Kupuohi about his spy and taking Kaahumanu to see her. I think he's got plenty going on. He and Kupuohi are already in a bit of a tough place. She called him by his name. He's completely not interested in adding anything to that fire.
Kaahumanu holds no influence over me.
Yet you seek her counsel.
The chiefs listen to her. I need her.
You would have her honor your thoughts over those of her chief.
Lava!
You are losing yourself, Kaiana.
And he gives her the infamous eyebrow furrow. Like, I'm so over this conversation. I'm trying to hold it in, but my face is saying everything.
Yeah.
At least my eyebrows are. So that's my Momoa moment.
What prop or artifact would you want from this episode? Technically, for me, it's a person, but I'd like to have a spy in my charge. Wouldn't that be awesome? I mean, someone who can check out the landscape anytime I'm developing a project for HPR, like see who's doing it well so I can do it better, you know? Yeah, I mean, one of my goals is for other public radio stations to want to come to us to learn about the cool new ways we're innovating. And I think like having a spy to keep us ahead of the curve would be really nice.
I'll go with the Ulumaika set shown during the celebration at the beginning of the episode. If you're not familiar with Makahiki games, that was the stone that the women were throwing. They were rolling between two sticks in the earth. And it's a very well-known game that many people still play in Hawaii. But I liked it because everyone's happy.
Yeah.
And a lot of times in this series, it has been very serious. So to have this happy moment, the games being played, everyone laughing and celebrating, it's wonderful. I also saw my niece Kahele Aimoku in that scene. So it makes it a bit special. She got to go all the way to Aotearoa. She got to be an extra in Chief of War. And they actually had a close-up of her face. And it's a really cute face. Yeah. So she deserved that close-up.
All right. Here's the second of our new categories. This one is who won the episode. And what we're talking about is the character we think accomplished the most or overall was the most important character in the episode. For me, Ka'ahumanu won the episode. She's got the ear and the hearts of two powerful men. Pretty good for someone who grew up in isolation with little self-confidence. We see her ambition and maneuvering skill set grow with each episode. So I think Ka'ahumanu victorious in this episode.
Okay, mine would be Ka'iana. He was right about everything.
Yeah.
He's emerging as someone who needs to be taken seriously and whose advice should be highly valued and acted upon.
All right, last category, our hot take or prediction for next episode or series finale. All the pieces seem to be in place for war in a time of peace, but I'm predicting something big happens within Ka'iana's family. They're going to lose someone. My guess is Namake, and it's either going to re-solidify them or break them forever.
I predict that the Day of Spilled Brains will ultimately put Kamehameha and Ka'iana on the same page. Okay. And that Kamehameha has been pushing for diplomatic and peaceful solutions, but I'm pretty sure that this event will change his mind. Only two episodes left. I'm going to say Ka'iana and Kamehameha come together. They got to deal with Kiowa. And I think that those will be the loose ends of the story that later we have to pick up on when the next seasons come out.
All right. We do have an interview with a special guest today, and she has a unique perspective on someone we've been discussing regularly on this podcast.
Today, we've got more from our interview with Awayaulu project manager Kaui Saidudwa, and she's got quite a bit to say about Ka'ahumanu.
Ka'ahumanu is not my favorite character in our history. She screws up a lot of things. There's a lot of warfare, a lot of things happen because of Ka'ahumanu. Ke'eaumoku is her father, who is Kamehameha's, one of his trusted uncles, one of his most trusted uncles. But on his deathbed, Kamehameha asks Ke'eaumoku, who do I have to watch out in my kingdom? Who do I have to watch? Who will turn on me? Who has the power to holy this, what I've built? And the father says, Ka'ahumanu. Ka'ahumanu is who you have to watch out for. And it's from that time forward that Kamehameha puts a couple on Ka'ahumanu, and no one can sleep with her because she's related to all the Maui chiefs. All the Maui chiefs are her ohana, right? Her mother, Namahana, is sister to Kahikili. So she can really form an alliance quickly with all her Maui uncles. So he puts a couple on her, and then no one can sleep with her. And then she sleeps with Kanihonui, who Kamehameha is his favorite nephew. And then he ends up killing Kanihonui because Ka'ahumanu was having all her dalliances with him whenever he went to war. Anyway, so Ka'ahumanu is not my fave person. But in the story, I thought Luciane did so much research. So I actually met with her. She spoke to everybody. She went to Maui. She did a lot of her research. And she really grew trying to imbue Ka'ahumanu, her spirit into her. She went to Maui to find the cave where Ka'ahumanu is born. And she really did a lot of research. I spent some time talking to her, Hina Newbull, who was her coach. Both of them, they really dug into the character of Ka'ahumanu. And I think Luciane does an amazing job. Her olelo is pretty damn cool, pretty damn spot on. But you can also hear Hina. And Luciana is Hawaiian. You hear Hina's dialect and the way Hina speaks in Luciane. That is my answer for Ka'ahumanu and where this show goes and how they grow it with her. Because there's going to be a focus on Ka'ahumanu as this moves forward.
I feel like you gave us a really interesting perspective on her because we've had a couple of discussions and what you shared is completely different than our perspective. So I think it was really cool to understand a different historical context for who she is and what the consequences of her actions ultimately were. So I appreciate that. It was so cool to listen to you say that she's not your favorite. I was like, oh, well, how come? So
Russell also grew up in the church. So Ka'ahumanu is very,
Very revered, you know. Right? Very revered by the church.
Yeah, yeah, no, I mean, you know, she does a lot of things. There's a lot of, she breaks the couple system together with Kyopo Lani. You know, there's a lot of things that she's in charge of. And even when the missionaries first come, she doesn't embrace Christianity. She's not the first convert to Christianity, as some might say. You know, it's Kyopo Lani is the first convert to Christianity, and she makes the edict, you know. Kaahumanu is hanging out for a while. I mean, she practically takes Kaumuali'i hostage from Kauai and forces him to marry her, and he never sees home again.
We talked about that. Yeah. That was diplomatic. She was smart.
It's like, you know, nobody talks about those things about Kaahumanu, you know, and then some has a dalliance with his son as well. You know, she wasn't ready to be a Christian yet. And then once she decided she was sowing her oats, you know, she went, yes, and every village will have a teacher and everyone will learn Christianity. And then she would go out and sit. And she would sit with the pastors who are doing their thing and sit there and watch her people and like make sure. There's a really cool picture. It's a painting from the 1830s of her sitting in a chair while Kahu is preaching to Kanaks who are on the ground with their Bible, and she's just making sure it's happening, you know. The thing about Christianity and religion is through religion, we get literacy. Literacy and religion happen simultaneously. I mean, you're not sure really which one they're aiming for, but they end up getting them both, right? Which is why Hawaii becomes such a literate nation. You know, I don't not like her. She's not my favorite. That's all. There's a lot of parts about her that I've come to respect. She was a woman who knew what she wanted. She becomes that. She's not that at the beginning. At first, she was, I think, just rebelling for the sake of rebellion. And then when she found her footing. But honestly, when Kamehameha dies, he's in the Halemaua with the men. She's not even with him. She's not even there. But when he dies, she tells everybody, he told me, I'm going to be there. And they all believed her. And they all just went with it. And they all just went, oh. You know, she kind of maneuvers and manipulates things.
Yeah. And I think we see a little bit of that in episode 3 starting to, I kind of just pressed it off. I was like, oh, well, you know, maybe she's just trying to be friendly with Kamehameha. But now I realize she's starting to dig her claws in.
Yeah.
That is it for this episode of Feathers and Fire, HPR's Chief of War After Show podcast. I'm Russell Subiono.
I'm Mehana Makainai. Thanks again so much for listening.
This episode was written by myself and Mehana and produced by me and Savannah Harriman-Pote.
Mahalo to our supporting team of Liberty Peralta, Sylvia Flores, and Sophia McCullough.
Big mahalo to HPR's president and CEO, Meredith Artley, who shares her love of our podcast with everyone she knows so we don't come across as boastful or shameless self-promoters.
Our theme song is Clarity by Kenny Endo from the album Eternal Energy. Learn more about Kenny and his music, as well as his traditional and contemporary Japanese drumming school, Taiko Center of the Pacific, at kennyendo.com.
Our next episode will discuss episode 8 of Chief of War, The Sacred New Grove. And if you don't know the word new, N-I-U, it's the Hawaiian word for coconut. You can download it on Saturday from Apple, Spotify, or the HPR website, hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Russell Subiono. Aloha and mahalo nui for listening.
I'm Mehana Makainai. Until next time, pipi holo ka'au.